Hello and welcome to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today. Today's Tuesday, June 28. I'm your reader, Kathleen. From the front page of the Gazette, this story is by Gage Miskimen. Corridor businesses adapting to rising costs. Businesses in the corridor, as with everywhere around the country, have added inflation to their list of worries. Throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, businesses of all sizes have been taking on various waves, from the continuing labor shortage and supply chain disruptions. On top of that, Kelsey Hoth, owner of Friday in Uptown Marion, had been dealing with construction from the city's 7th Avenue streetscape project that closed the street in front of her year-old business for the first part of the summer. Inflation, Hoth said, has affected the mainstay of her ice cream and French fry business, dairy. Dairy is the main source of our income, Hoth said. The dairy prices have skyrocketed. A good quality, hand-scooped ice cream is also not priced the same as soft serve you get anywhere else. Hoth also noted the 3-gallon ice cream containers they buy have increased 25% in price. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, retail prices for milk are the highest ever. The average price was $4.20 a gallon in May, according to BLS data, an increase of around 10% from the year before. The cost of the restaurant's frying oil also has almost doubled. One jug last year was $46. We use a quality oil that isn't smoky and has a longer life, and now that's $89, Hoth said. We change our fryer oil weekly and filter it daily, so we're using 4 to 6 jugs per week. Film Scene Executive Director Andrew Sherburn said the not-for-profit Iowa City Cinema has been seeing rising costs. We're buying the same toilet paper as everyone else, so we're seeing that sort of impact, Sherburn said. Theaters, whose main profits come from concession sales, also are dealing with issues surrounding other supplies, such as containers and liners. And as for that movie house staple, popcorn, some farmers nationwide are choosing to grow less corn in favor of more profitable crops, such as soybeans, according to the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Film Scene, known for bringing filmmakers to Iowa City for the public to meet, has seen a rise in those price tags, too. That's gotten more expensive, but it's something we want to continue to do, Sherburn said. We're a nonprofit cinema, so we want to make sure we are making the arts accessible. The theater industry as a whole has been trying to find its footing again after being seriously hampered during the pandemic. Recent inflationary pressures have added more obstacles. But Sherburn believes Film Scene's position as a not-for-profit gives it an advantage. It's a learning moment as a film industry, but I feel good that we give people an experience worth leaving their house for, and we've created a community through presenting film, he said. So I hope people continue to come out and make it part of what they do. One of the most notable price increases of all businesses has been at the gas pump. Prices have approached $5 per gallon around the state and surpassed that in other parts of the country. Chad LaGrange, Chief Commercial Officer for CRST, said fuel and the cost of equipment, including trucks, has affected the Cedar Rapids-based transportation company. The cost of a Class A truck is $101,000 compared to $53,000 a year ago, LaGrange said. The good news is, hopefully, that it peaked in March. The price of used equipment is starting to come down, but it's been a big increase this year. Roughly 70% of the nation's freight is transported by truck, according to the American Trucking Associations. Around the nation, diesel fuel has been approaching around $6 a gallon in June. Last year, it was about $3.40. That's 2 150-gallon tanks on our larger trucks, so it's a significant cost driver, LaGrange said. We have a fuel optimization program and fuel surcharge program that helps us manage through this pretty well. But some of these smaller carriers without the buying power of CRST are feeling that impact too. All three businesses in different sectors are making small changes, but all three feel good about their current level of staffing. LaGrange said CRST ended 2021 with 6,500 employees, including non-drivers, and is expecting that number to climb throughout the rest of 2022. The company has added more parental leave and paid time off in an attempt to recruit and keep more employees in a competitive industry sector. "We feel better than we did at the beginning of the year," LaGrange said. "Our ability to recruit and retain drivers in the past few months has improved. We've made adjustments this year to help incentivize." In Marion, Hoth, so far, has avoided raising prices at Friday, and she said she doesn't intend to this year. "I feel like we need to stick it out a little bit longer," Hoth said. "With inflation, it's been kind of hard to make any adjustments because I don't want to offend customers. Until we see price increases from distributors, I don't anticipate any changes here." Hoth instead has trained her staff to mostly part-time high schoolers to eliminate waste, which in turn has helped offset some of the inconsistencies in supply orders. The type of utensils and cups they use, for example, can change weekly. "Those little things go a long way," Hoth said. "People are noticeably spending less, cutting back." Hoth added that having teenagers filling her staff, 30 employees, is an advantage. "It's fun, and they're working with their peers. They're the best at referring their friends," Hoth said. "They come in, work 4 to 6 hour shifts, and make $12 an hour, and it's an advantage for us because we need several people on staff during the summer." In Iowa City, Sherburn said Film Scene has been supportive of the Johnson County minimum wage increase to $11.56 an hour on July 1, but it will increase some labor costs. The theater increased prices at the beginning of this year, but Sherburn said it is trying to hold prices where they are. A few strategies include setting the thermostat a little higher and ordering months' worth of popcorn in bulk when possible. "We do partly rely on folks in the community through our membership program, and donors and grants also help support us," Sherburn said. Film Scene also has around 30 employees. "We haven't had trouble getting new staff, and we feel fortunate that people want to work here," he said. "We try to make it an attractive place to work, and so far, we've been successful." Also on the front page today, $36 million project eyed at Loftus site. This story is by Marissa Payne. A local developer is looking to transform a long vacant block on the main street connecting downtown and the new Bohemia district with a $36 million mixed-use building that will add 186 rental units, retail space, a rooftop patio, and parking. Dave Drown, president of GLD Commercial, is giving the empty land at the old Loftus lumber site, 900 3rd Street Southeast, another shot at redevelopment after previous plans faltered amid a legal dispute between the O'Connell family, who owns the land, and previously proposed developer Richard Sova of Illinois-based Landover Corp. "It's been worked on for so long by so many people, and it's been an eyesore to the community," city manager Jeff Pomerantz said of the Loftus project. "We have worked really hard to get to this point, and we're very pleased that GLD, through Dave Drown, has taken on this big task, and it's going to be a beautiful amenity to Cedar Rapids and to New Bohemia." A five-story building would have 186 market-rate rental units, a mix of studio, 1+, 2, and 3-bedroom units, as well as a rooftop patio and amenity area. 11,000 square feet of first floor retail and commercial space, and surface and covered parking. Construction is set to start in April of 2023 and finish in October 2024. The City Council today will consider city incentives for the project, a reimbursement of 100% of the increment taxes the development generates, a net present value of $6.4 million. The developer also will seek state workforce housing tax credits and brownfield-grayfield redevelopment tax credits. Projects like this require layers of funding in order to make them happen, especially in today's economic conditions with escalating prices, as well as increasing interest rates, delays, and supply chain issues, economic development manager Caleb Mason said. All those things add cost to the project, especially one that takes so long to build. All those costs get compounded. Given the large size of the building, similar to nearby Bottle Works and Water Tower Place condominiums, Drown said there was some sensitivity to the sense of scale, so it's designed to look like multiple buildings. He said it fits the aesthetics of the neighborhood, using identical red brick, then transitioning to different materials and design. Early on, Drown said developers met with people in the neighborhood and city government for feedback, tried to implement much of that in the plan, and used OPN Architectural Services to bring it to life. We're excited for the opportunity to move forward, and we look forward to adding to the downtown housing stock, Drown said. The O'Connells still own the land. Drown said the plan is to close on the land this fall, subject to obtaining city approval for the project. The O'Connells and SOVA agreed to dismiss a lawsuit over the land before the matter went to trial. Through SOVA's entities, Landover Corp. and Cedar Venture LLC, he filed a lawsuit last June against the O'Connell family, alleging the family breached the contract by looking to sell the property to an unnamed third party. According to court documents, SOVA had secured all necessary financing by November 2019, when one investor abruptly backed out of the project in March 2020, about 60 days before construction was slated to start, forcing him to look for new investors. By the time he had secured two investors for the project to move forward, according to the court records, the O'Connell family had entered into a real estate purchase agreement with a third party. There are multiple housing projects on today's City Council agenda, collectively exceeding a $100 million investment, which Pomerantz said is a signal of a city with a lot of momentum. During these economic times, it shows the interest and the support that Cedar Rapids has from the development community, and we believe that these projects are going to be very successful, Pomerantz said. Another project is the KCG Company's proposed $41.2 million redevelopment of the Midwest Athletic Club building at 1220 Jacqueline Drive Southwest, which was damaged in the 2020 derecho, into affordable housing units. The developer is planning 36 one-bedroom units, 95 two-bedroom units, and 50 three-bedroom units, 180 total. All units would be reserved for households whose incomes are at or below 60% of the area median income. It would also feature amenities including a swimming pool, dog park, and fitness center. Through the city's local match economic development program, Cedar Rapids would give a 10-year, 100% exemption of the value generated by the improvements, an estimated value of $3.2 million over the 10-year period, or a net present value of $2.1 million. The developer also is seeking state aid through the Iowa Finance Authority's 4% low-income housing tax credits. Additionally, developers behind the $81.5 million mixed-use First and First West site are seeking workforce housing tax credits for 63 housing units, including in a mixed-use building along First Avenue West. The overall building is about $15 to $16 million, Mason said, and the $9.8 million of that being the housing component. There also is office and retail space in the building. City incentives for that building would give a 20-year, 85% tax reimbursement, an estimated $2.4 million over that time period. Turning to page 2 on the Iowa Today page, Field of Dreams TV series gets a grant from the state. This story from Tom Barton. The state of Iowa will invest in the development of a Field of Dreams television series, new trail construction, and new Des Moines lakefront amenities. Governor Kim Reynolds and the Iowa Economic Development Authority on Monday announced $16.5 million in grant money awarded to four projects in the first round of funding through Destination Iowa, a program supported by the Federal American Rescue Plan Act. The $100 million program announced in April invests in transformational attractions that will bolster the quality of life in Iowa communities and attract visitors and new residents, according to a news release from the governor's office. Projects awarded grant funding so far are $6 million to Universal Television for the development of a Field of Dreams television series. Filming will be based in several Iowa communities, including those in Polk, Mahaska, Boone, and Clinton counties. Plans include set construction of a ball field and refurbished farmhouse in Polk City. $7 million to the Siouxland Regional Trail System to develop 100 miles of continuous trail projects connecting Sioux City, Lamars, Hinton, Merrill, and Sergeant Bluff. The project includes the Cone Mountain Bike Park, the 18.5-mile Plywood Trail, and 4.3-mile Luss Hills Scenic Trail. Also, $2.5 million to Polk County Conservation for the Easter Lake North Shore Project. According to a news release, the project will provide an accessible recreation hub for rowing, swimming, fishing, and other water sports. And $1 million to Dallas County Conservation to complete a 4-mile trail connection that links two existing trails in central Iowa, the Raccoon River Valley and High Trestle Trail. Once complete, the project will create a 120-mile continuous loop of trail. The Gazette reported last month the 7-part Field of Dreams prequel series will be streamed next year on Peacock, taking a deeper dive into the backstory and characters from the beloved Kevin Costner film. Dyersville, the location where the 1989 baseball movie was shot, however, is not on the series docket, as it will be filming around the time Major League Baseball returns to the site for a regular season game between the Cubs and the Cincinnati Reds on August 11. On August 9, the Cedar Rapids Colonels take on the Quad City River Bandits in a minor league baseball game. The TV series will use local crews, suppliers, and vendors for construction, catering, transportation, and set decoration, a news release states. Renovo Media Group of Clear Lake will bring equipment and expertise. Musco Lighting and its subsidiary, Iowa Sports Turf, will help light, design, and construct the baseball field. IEDA will continue to review applications as they arrive through December 31st or until funding runs out. Also in Iowa Today News, this story is by Isabel Zaluska, Iowa City Church total loss from fire. The Iowa City Church, fully engulfed in flames and smoke early Saturday, is searching for a place to hold services after being declared a total loss. The cause of the fire is unknown, the Johnson County Sheriff's Office said Monday. It is standard practice for the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives to investigate a fire involving a church, and the primary focus at this point is to determine the cause, a news release said. The Johnson County Joint Emergency Communications Center received a call at 4:22 a.m. Saturday about a structure fire at 4643 American Legion Road. The West Branch and Iowa City Fire Departments responded to the fire on the east side near Iowa City, as did Iowa City Police and the Johnson County Sheriff's Office. The fire was in West Branch's jurisdiction. It took several hours to extinguish due to the size of the building and bad weather, the Sheriff's Office said. Officials do not have an estimated cost of damages yet. There were no injuries. Lead pastor Tom Steele received a phone call early Saturday while on vacation. Steele, who has been pastor at Iowa City Church for 17 years, said getting the news was surreal. Your typical shock and trying to get your mind around the fact that something you've been so associated with is gone. Just how sudden it was and how it happened, Steele said. Please be praying for our church, the church said in a Saturday morning Facebook post. Iowa City Church is a non-denominational Christian church. Steele said he would be shocked if the cause of the fire was something other than lightning. A storm with heavy rain and lightning passed through the area Saturday morning. The church has served the community for over 30 years, Steele said, adding that it was built in 1991. The church hopes to find an alternative meeting place and is working on narrowing down options. Steele said the hope is to have a more solidified plan in the next few weeks. Steele also said many of the churches in the area have reached out to offer building space and resources. Steele added that it's humbling to have so many pastors and community members reach out to him in the last few days. I've just been overwhelmed by so many people offering space, Steele said. We have a lot of options to choose from. Steele said he is optimistic about the future as the church adapts to the situation. I'm just very fortunate God's provided for us, even in the midst of what would appear to be a tragedy, Steele said. Anyone interested in donating to Iowa City Church can do so at iowacitychurch.org/support. Updated information on next steps will be posted on the church's Facebook page. And this story by Marissa Payne, the City of Cedar Rapids has published its annual Water Quality Report for 2021, which provides a comprehensive look in the past year's drinking water quality. The city's finished water had no violations, according to a city news release. Regulated chemicals, including nitrate, arsenic, and fluoride, were all at acceptable levels, according to the report. The Cedar Rapids Water Division achieved 100% compliance with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, Iowa Water Quality Expectations in 2021, according to the release. The city sent the report to residents and businesses in the May issue of the Our CR magazine. Customers can learn more about city water quality by viewing the report online or by calling 319-286-5900. Turning now to the Insight page, the guest editorial today is a reprint from the St. Louis Post Dispatch on Sunday. Time to act on insulin costs. Few issues within America's dysfunctional healthcare system are more pressing than the astronomical price of insulin, access to which is, for millions of Americans, literally a matter of life or death. Congress is finally moving toward approving legislation that would partially address the problem, but passage will rely on the willingness of some hesitant Republicans to set aside their free market absolutism and acknowledge that the apparent price gouging going on isn't what markets are supposed to do. Almost 2 million Americans have type 1 diabetes, which typically requires daily insulin shots. More than 30 million have type 2 diabetes, which often requires insulin therapy. In the past decade alone, the cost of that life-saving insulin has tripled. Today, even insured patients, depending on the terms of their policies, can end up paying $300 or more monthly for their insulin, while uninsured patients can face monthly costs of well over $1,000. The situation has spawned horror stories of diabetics self-rationing with less insulin than they're supposed to take, with sometimes tragic outcomes. The reasons for the price explosion are complicated and contentious, with the pharmaceuticals, insurance companies, and wholesalers essentially blaming each other. An investigation by the Senate Finance Committee in 2020, headed by then-Chairman Senator Chuck Grassley, Republican of Iowa, blamed them all. The reins of the Senate have changed, but the bipartisan legislation Grassley called for has finally arrived. Senators Susan Collins from Maine, Jean Shaheen from New Hampshire, last week unveiled a measure that would cap the monthly insulin costs for insured diabetics at $35. It doesn't cap costs for those who are uninsured, a more complicated issue that would have to be addressed in broader legislation. But it's a start. Senator Roy Blunt told the Washington Post this month that he won't rule out the bill until he sees it, but that, quote, generally, I'm not supportive of price controls. I'm supportive of competition and things that encourage competition, end quote. But this particular market has clearly colluded at the detriment of its consumers, some of whom have died because of it. We encourage Blunt and others with reservations to consider that when a given market becomes detrimental to its customers' health, a hands-off approach isn't conservatism, but abdication of responsibility. And again, that's the guest editorial. 24-hour Dorman today is titled, Grassley's Court Throws Out Roe. Iowa Senator Chuck Grassley welcomed the Supreme Court's ruling Friday overturning Roe v. Wade. Makes sense, considering he played a large role in making it happen. Today's decision recognized that a weak legal reasoning in Roe v. Wade has done more to provoke conflict than to resolve it, as the late Justice Ginsburg observed, said Grassley in a statement, apparently believing Friday's ruling ending constitutionally protected abortion rights won't provoke an even more intense conflict. Regardless of your views on this issue, any other issues for that matter, we all should respect the role of our impartial judiciary and the decisions that it renders. We're blessed to live in a country where the people play a leading role in how we are governed, Grassley added. Yes, it was the people who elected former President Barack Obama to a second term in 2012. And it was Grassley, as chairman of the Judiciary Committee in 2016, who refused to act on Obama's nomination of Merrick Garland to fill an open Supreme Court seat. Grassley declared he would deny the president's pick a hearing because it was an election year. He held the seat open for Donald Trump, who nominated Neil Gorsuch. He joined Friday's 5-4 ruling, yanking away abortion rights. In 2020, as a member of the Judiciary Committee, Grassley helped push through the nomination of Amy Coney Barrett just days before the general election. Barrett also joined the majority in overturning Roe. On Friday, the fruits of Grassley's cynical hypocrisy were harvested to the detriment of millions of Americans. The people, in poll after poll, say they support abortion rights. As for our impartial judiciary, please spare us the high-minded rhetoric. This court has become a wholly owned subsidiary of the Republican Party. The majority decimated abortion rights simply because it could. That's why Republicans put them there. On Thursday, the Supreme Court smacked down the ability of blue states to regulate carrying concealed firearms. Then, on Friday, the court majority empowered red states to ban abortion. This is the GOP agenda dressed up in the trappings of court decisions. Clarence Thomas, in a solo concurring opinion, wrote that the rationale for striking down Roe should be applied to other precedents that relied on the due process clause of the 14th Amendment, including marriage equality and access to contraceptives. Sure, it's one justice, but no rights are truly safe under this radical court. And of course, we have a governor and legislature in Iowa that would be more than willing to yank away our rights. The Supreme Court has given them a green light. And it now seems far less like the Iowa Supreme Court would stop them after its recent decision denying a fundamental right to abortion. As governor, I won't rest until every unborn Iowan is protected and respected, Governor Kim Reynolds tweeted on Friday. So she's down for a complete abortion ban. Unless you're a gun owner, your rights and liberties are sitting on rapidly shifting sand. Our courts can no longer be depended upon to curb our politicians' worst impulses. Are you feeling blessed? And that's 24-Hour Doorman. One community letter today, and the title is Remember January 6 on July 4. This 4th of July, as we celebrate our independence and our freedoms, let us not forget that the history of our great country is one of expanding our democracy, the right to the citizens to vote and decide our future. That 246-year tradition is now being threatened by an extreme element of one political party that is hell-bent on restricting voting rights and, as seen on January 6, using violence and any means necessary to overturn a free and fair election. As you sit among the crowd of people, young and old, celebrating our birth of freedom and the country we have become, thanks to the sacrifices of generations to preserve it and to expand our democracy at home and around the world, juxtapose that spirit, that image, against what we witnessed on January 6, 2021, as an angry mob tried to overturn our democratic process. It falls upon us to restore the faith in our democracy and be sure we never again allow such extreme anti-democratic forces to gain control of our country. We owe it to our children and future generations to act, to vote with determination, to ensure that the grand old flag we honor on the 4th of July will forever wave proudly over the land of the free and the home of the brave. And that letter today is signed by Larry Hodgkin of Tipton. You are listening to the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Tuesday, June 28, on Iris. And now we turn to today's obituary page. First in the short notices from Dyersville, Wilma M. Menson. Wilma died Saturday, June 25th. The Kramer Funeral Home in Dyersville is in charge. From Monticello, Joanne Yaus, age 84, died Sunday, June 26th. Getch Funeral Home in Monticello is in charge of arrangements. And in Vinton, Virginia Barr, age 89, died Monday, June 27th. Phillips Funeral Home in Vinton is in charge of arrangements. Turning now to the regular notices, first in Cedar Rapids, Catherine Ann Jones, age 59, died Friday, June 24th. A visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Friday, July 1st at the Murdoch Linwood Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Cedar Rapids. A memorial service will take place at 11 a.m. Saturday, July 2nd at the funeral home. Burial will follow at Linwood Cemetery in Cedar Rapids. Please share a memory of Kathy at murdochfuneralhome.com. From Anamosa, Lawrence Aloysius Schwerz of Anamosa passed away June 26th. Funeral services will be held at the Getch Funeral Home in Anamosa with visitation from 4 to 7 p.m. on June 30th and the funeral at 10:30 a.m. July 1st. A private family burial will take place at Cedar Memorial in Cedar Rapids. From Belle Plaine, George William Kuchinek Jr., age 99, passed away June 26th at the Belle Plaine Specialty Care. Mass of Christian burial will be at 10:30 a.m. Thursday, June 30th at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Chelsea, with visitation 1 hour prior to the service. Burial will take place at St. Joseph's Cemetery in Chelsea. Memorials may be directed to the family and online condolences expressed at newhousefuneralservice.com. From Center Point, Verla Dorlina Portraits Mullins passed away Thursday, June 23rd at her home in Center Point of cancer in the loving care of her nurse daughter, son, and St. Croix Hospice. Murdoch Funeral Home and Cremation Service in Center Point is assisting the family. Private family services will be held at a later date. A memorial fund has been established. You may leave a condolence or a message at murdochfuneralhome.com. From Anamosa, Thomas G. McElmiel, age 82, of Anamosa, died Thursday, June 9. Services will be held at a later date. In Iowa City, Kevin Neil Malone passed away December 22, 2021 at 10:38 p.m. at the University of Iowa Hospitals in Iowa City, surrounded by his beloved daughter, Harper Lee, his mother, Carrie, and his former wife and lifelong friend, Kristen Adams. A celebration of Kevin's life will be from 3 to 8 p.m. July 2nd at Harvest Preserve, 1645 North Scott Boulevard in Iowa City. In Monticello, Joan Daly, age 78, died Sunday, June 26th at the Monticello Nursing and Rehabilitation Center, surrounded by her family following a long illness. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, June 29th, at the Getch Funeral Home with a private family interment in the Oakwood Cemetery. Friends may call from 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday at the Getch Funeral Home in Monticello. You may share your thought, memory, or condolence at getchonline.com. And from Middle Amana, Esther Raymond, age 92, passed away Sunday, June 26th at the Colonial Manor of Amana. Funeral service is at 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, July 6th at the Middle Amana Church with Elder Andrea Haldy officiating. Burial will be at the Middle Amana Cemetery. Visitation is 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. Tuesday, July 5 at the Middle Amana Church. Memorials may be contributed to the Amana Church Society or the Amana Community Library. Cluster Funeral Home Marengo is assisting the family with arrangements. Turning now to the sports page, this story by K.J. Pilcher, high school baseball notebook, Marion surges as playoffs near. A look back and a look ahead in high school baseball. The season has had its share of challenges for Marion. The team has been displaced by field renovations. Injuries and illness have been prevalent. The defending state champions even fell out of the Iowa High School Baseball Coaches Association Class 3A rankings for a week. The Wolves moved back into the top 10 after a big doubleheader sweep of then number 8 Independence, 4-2 and 12-6 on Saturday at Mount Mercy. Marion climbed back into the rankings at number 9 this week, one spot ahead of the Mustangs. Mount Vernon claimed a win over a ranked foe last week, outscoring 2A number 9 Anamosa 8-4 on Friday at Ash Park Field. Julio Galvin had 4 hits and 5 RBIs to lead the Mustangs. The ranked matchup between 4A Iowa City High and 3A Western Dubuque was everything anticipated. The two Mississippi Valley Conference Mississippi Division leaders split the twin bill. The Bobcats won the opener 9-5, and City High won the nightcap 6-2. And in a look ahead, today, Lisbon at 17-5 is at Don Bosco, 19-3. The Lions received votes and the Dons are ranked 5th in the final poll. Lisbon was a state quarterfinalist last year. The Dons have been a regular at the state tournament in recent years. The game is a good barometer for the upcoming postseason. On Wednesday, Dubuque Wallert at 21-8 plays Western Dubuque at 23-6 at Farley Community Field. The MVC Mississippi Division could be determined there. The Bobcats started the week in first and are ranked 4th in 3A and 18-6 in MVC games. The Golden Eagles are ranked 5th in the same class and are 16-6 in the conference. In high school softball, this story is by Jeff Linder. It's the final week. The toughest week of the season is upon the Linmar Lions, but they have a cushion, a little margin for error. Linmar has a 3.5-game lead in the Mississippi Valley Conference Mississippi Division with 6 league games to play, a tricky Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday swing of 3 consecutive doubleheaders. The Iowa High School softball regular season reaches its crescendo this week with Class 1A team transitioning to postseason play on Friday. Here's a look at the area conference races. Locked in a tight race in the Mississippi Division with Iowa City Liberty for most of the season, Linmar gained the upper hand with a 6-0 league run last week. The Lions will try to have it wrapped up before a potential winner-take-all twin bill at Liberty on Thursday. The Lions precede that with home doubleheaders against Cedar Rapids Prairie tonight and Dubuque Hempstead on Wednesday. Hempstead has taken control of the Valley Division race, a combination of 3 league wins and or Cedar Rapids Kennedy losses means an outright title for the Mustangs. Ranked number 1 in Class 3A, Mount Vernon has run away with the East Division championship. The West Division race should have come into focus last night. Clear Creek Amana holds the advantage on Williamsburg. Both faced challenges, and the Clippers hosted Solon for a doubleheader. The Raiders ended their league slate at Benton Community. In the River Valley, Northeast is the North Division champion, and West Liberty is 1 win from clinching the outright title in the South. The Comets hosted West Branch last night. In games of area interest today, Cedar Rapids Prairie is at Linmar, and this is in high school softball. Waterloo West is at Cedar Rapids Jefferson. Waterloo East at Cedar Rapids Kennedy. Cedar Falls is at Cedar Rapids Washington. Monticello plays at Iowa City Regina. Iowa City Liberty is at Western Dubuque. Iowa City West is at Dubuque Hempstead. And Iowa City High is at Dubuque Wallert. On the boys' side, in high school baseball, Monticello is at Iowa City Regina, and Cedar Rapids Jefferson is at Burlington. Turning now to the Business 380 page, IWD outage expected to last into today. Iowa Workforce Development's iowaworks.gov website, which developed an outage Sunday, was expected to remain down through today, the state agency said in a news release on Monday. The outage was not expected to affect jobless payments, it said. The vendor-related outage was disrupting the weekly continuing unemployment claims and jobs search process for claimants, according to the news release. New unemployment claims have been unaffected, the agency said, because they are filed solely through the IWD's central website, Iowa Workforce Development. Until the site is fixed, IWD advised unemployment claimants to skip reporting work search activities on iowaworks.gov and instead to file weekly claims at uiclaims.iwd. This unfortunate outage is a problem that our vendor is working hard to fix, and we hope to have the iowaworks.gov website back serving Iowans very soon, according to IWD Director Beth Thompson. Also in business news, the airlines blame understaffing at FAA for flight problems. This is an AP story. Airlines under scrutiny for widespread flight disruptions are renewing their criticism of the government agency that manages the nation's airspace, saying understaffing at the FAA is crippling traffic along the East Coast. Airlines for America, which represents the largest U.S. carriers, said Friday it wants to know FAA's staffing plans for the July 4th holiday weekend so we can plan accordingly. The comments from the industry group could serve as a preemptive defense in case airlines again suffer thousands of canceled and delayed flights over the holiday weekend when travel is expected to set new pandemic-era highs. The industry is actively and nimbly doing everything possible to create a positive customer experience, since it is in an airline's inherent interest to keep customers happy so they return for future business, Nicholas Calillo, president of the trade group, said in a letter to the TSA, Pete Buttigieg. Calillo said airlines have dropped 15% of the flights they originally planned for June through August to make the remaining flights more reliable. They are hiring and training more pilots and customer service agents and giving passengers more flexibility to change travel plans. However, we have also observed that FAA staffing challenges have led to traffic restrictions under blue sky conditions, he added. The FAA shot back with a reference to taxpayer money airlines received after the pandemic devastated air travel. People expect when they buy an airline ticket that they'll get where they need to go, safely, efficiently, reliably, and affordably, the FAA said in a statement. After receiving $54 billion in pandemic relief to help save the airlines from mass layoffs and bankruptcy, the American people deserve to have their expectations met. The FAA said it has added controllers in high-traffic areas and built in alternate routes to keep planes moving. The airline trade group chief's comments came a week after Buttigieg called airline leaders to a virtual meeting and threatened to punish carriers that fail to meet consumer protection standards set by his department, which includes the FAA. Buttigieg said he called the meeting after being alarmed by the high number of canceled flights around Memorial Day, more than 2,700 in a five-day stretch, according to tracking service FlightAware. More than 600 U.S. flights had been canceled and more than 4,200 delayed by early afternoon Friday, according to FlightAware. On Thursday, thunderstorms on the East Coast contributed to more than 800 cancellations and 6,600 delays. Turning now to the community page, this story is titled Come Together by Emily Anderson. Different cultural groups came together to share food and activities June 16th at the community picnic hosted by YPN, a Cedar Rapids-based nonprofit that supports young parents and families. YPN, formerly known as Young Parents Network, hosts the summer picnic annually to celebrate parents who have completed YPN programs or graduated entirely from the network. Parents typically graduate when their child turns 5, according to Alejandro Pino, the YPN executive director. During the picnic, children of different backgrounds played together on the playground and splash pad at Tucker Park in Hiawatha. Pizza was served and water and lemonade were available to keep away the heat. Several attendees also brought food to share from their home countries. A little more than 20 parents were honored at the picnic for graduating from YPN, and several others were recognized for completing specific programs offered by the nonprofit. Thank you for participating because we love you and you make our day, Chelsea Steckley, YPN program advisor, told the graduates as she handed out certificates. Announcements made at the picnic were repeated 4 times in 4 languages, English, Spanish, French, and Pashto, which is an Indo-Iranian language spoken in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Iran. To accommodate the various languages spoken by the almost 200 attendees, many of whom don't speak English as a first language. YPN often works with immigrant and refugee parents, helping them make connections in the community and get supplies they need for their young children. Afghan refugees are the most recent group the nonprofit has begun working with. Representatives from the organization visited the hotels where many Afghans were staying while waiting to find permanent housing shortly after they were brought to the U.S. and offered to get the refugees connected to YPN programs. Alina Rahimi and Masia Safi, 2 Afghan women who had been participating in YPN programs, said they are grateful for the help the nonprofit has provided. They said they've been able to get supplies for their kids and learn things about U.S. culture that people born here may not even think about, like how to navigate a stoplight. They help us with everything, Rahimi said through an interpreter. They give me a lot of information. In some community things to do today, there will be free yoga and Pilates classes led by Abby Hogan on the Amazing Space patio and lawn. Afterwards, the Big Grove Brewery will offer samples of beers. Pints will be available for purchase. That takes place at the Indian Creek Nature Center, 5300 Otis Road Southeast in Cedar Rapids, from 6 to 7 p.m. today. That's free, but registration is required. And in a couple Eastern Iowa briefs, a Cedar Rapids artist takes second in a Minnesota art show. Artist Dick Grote of Cedar Rapids won second place in watercolor last week for his painting Snowbound Iowa at the 58th Annual Art of Possibilities Art Show and Sale for Artists with Disabilities in Minneapolis. Grote said he believes that the objective of his art is to go beyond recording just what he sees into what he imagines, to create paintings that are not just pleasing visually, but also are richly evocative. As he describes it, he danced with a brush instead of his feet. Using a wheelchair due to a hereditary muscular disease, Grote said he finds that the gracefulness of watercolor has transformed his life, both painting and teaching watercolor classes, and cocooning him from his disability and enables him to pursue a rewarding and successful life. And in Iowa City, meet the artists behind parking spaces in Iowa City. The artists behind the downtown Iowa City sonic art installation, The Parking Spaces, will be part of a panel discussion to give insights into their unique public art project, 5 p.m. July 18th at the Iowa City Public Library, 123 South Lynn Street, Meeting Room A. Parking Spaces is an asynchronous public art project that features audio pieces made up of 11 tracks that are coordinated with parking spots throughout downtown Iowa City. Using headphones and a smartphone, people can walk to each location and listen to stories and sonic poems that give new depth to locations that you may have walked past dozens of times. The project asks, how can we use sound to slow down and listen to the everyday public spaces we pass through? If we were to listen, what might we learn? What might we notice? Parking Spaces is a public art project created by Stephanie Miracle, choreographer and interdisciplinary artist, Ramin Roshando, composer and sound designer, and Stephen Willis, poet and actor. It also features audio contributions by more than a dozen individuals and groups. You can access a map of all 11 parking spaces and streamable tracks through an interactive website, theparkingspaces.com. And although the spaces are numbered, listening can occur in any order. QR codes are available at each location to direct people to audio. Transcripts are also available through the website. Turning now to the top weather story, this by meteorologist Hannah Messier, colors and temperature. During the summer, people are searching for ways to stay cool, sometimes by finding the shade or relaxing in air conditioning. But did you know you can protect yourself from June's heat by wearing a light-colored shirt? Lighter colors are good at reflecting sunlight, while darker clothing won't reflect as much, absorbing more heat. Therefore, a black t-shirt will be hotter than a white one. This effect is called albedo, which is a measurement of how well an object reflects radiation. The higher an object's albedo, the better it is at reflecting sunlight. So, when you're picking out a shirt on a hot day, wearing light colors will be a great way to beat the heat. We are looking at an isolated storm possibility today. Cedar Rapids, a high of 84. Iowa City, a high of 85. Low of 62. Wednesday and Thursday, mostly sunny and a little bit breezy. Looking for a high right at 90 in Cedar Rapids, 91 or 93 in Iowa City, and lows will be in the high 60s to low 70. Chance of storms reappears on Friday with a high of 82. Our normal high today is 82 with a normal low of 62. The record high was set at 103 degrees in 1931. The record low was set in 1925 at 40 degrees. Sunset tonight is 8:46 p.m., sunrise tomorrow at 5:34 a.m. That gives us 15 hours and 12 minutes of daylight. And we are in the new moon phase. Moon rise at 5:39 a.m. and set at 9:45 p.m. That does it for the reading of the Cedar Rapids Gazette for today, Tuesday, June 28. I've been your reader, Kathleen. You can access a copy of today's reading on iowaradioreading.org. Thank you for listening, and have a great, safe day.
In the People's Pharmacy Health Headlines, at high doses, nonsteroidal anti-inflammatory drugs like diclofenac, ibuprofen, or naproxen may increase the risk of kidney problems. The study that revealed this used de-identified medical records of more than 750,000 active duty U.S. Army soldiers. Consequently, these were active young and middle-aged adults. During the time of the study, from 2011 through 2014, nearly 18% of these soldiers got a prescription for 1 to 7 doses of an NSAID pain reliever in a month. Another 16% were prescribed more than 7 doses in a month. Fewer than 1% of these people were subsequently diagnosed with acute or chronic kidney disease. Nevertheless, the rate of kidney trouble was about 20% higher among people who had received high-dose NSAIDs than among those who had taken none. The authors described the increased risk as modest, but statistically significant.
Another class of drugs that can lead to kidney injury is proton pump inhibitors. A data mining initiative of the FDA's Adverse Event Reporting System analyzed kidney-related side effects among 43,000 people who took a drug such as esomeprazole, lansoprazole, or omeprazole. Approximately 8,000 people taking a histamine 2 blocker such as ranitidine or famotidine served as controls, since they take these drugs for similar symptoms. The researchers found that 5.6% of people on PPIs alone had a kidney-related side effect, while only 0.7% of those on H2 blockers did. chronic kidney disease was 28 times more likely, and acute kidney injury was 4 times more likely among people taking PPIs. While this analysis shows association, not causation, there are previous studies linking PPIs and kidney damage.
There's growing concern about a mysterious infectious disease that has been spreading among the wild deer population for decades. Scientists call it CWD, or chronic wasting disease. Hunters refer to this condition as zombie deer disease. It can also affect elk and moose. The CDC reports that this infectious disease has spread to wildlife in 24 states and 2 Canadian provinces. CWD was first detected in Colorado among captive deer in the 1960s and in the wild deer population in the 1980s. It's now affecting deer in the Midwest, Southwest, and some parts of the East Coast. The disease appears to be caused by a prion infection reminiscent of mad cow disease. An infectious disease expert at the University of Minnesota has warned that hunters who eat contaminated deer meat may eventually develop the human equivalent of chronic wasting disease.
Shoulder replacement surgery is becoming increasingly common. Now researchers writing in the BMJ say that patients should be warned that the risks are higher than originally thought. The investigators reviewed hospital and mortality records in the UK. When men between 50 and 59 have this type of shoulder surgery, 1 in 4 will need further surgery on that shoulder within 5 years. In addition, older people who underwent this kind of surgical procedure experienced high rates of serious adverse events. 1 in 9 older women and 1 in 5 older men had an infection, major blood clot, heart attack or stroke, or died within 3 months. The authors of the study encouraged their colleagues to counsel patients about the risks as well as the benefits of this kind of surgery.
Drug interactions are a serious hazard in hospitals and the community. If patients receive prescriptions for incompatible medications, they can experience severe side effects that may even be life-threatening. Electronic medical records are intended to warn prescribers and pharmacists about potentially dangerous interactions, but many do so indiscriminately. The result is something called alert fatigue. If clinicians receive too many warnings, they may not pay attention to the really important ones. A team at St. Jude Children's Research Hospital reviewed their alert system. They removed unnecessary alerts and provided additional information to the most important ones. After they finished, they tracked clinicians' reactions. Alert overrides dropped by 40%. One important change linked alerts to the patient's laboratory data, making them much more targeted. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week.